Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. We do have a new whiskey to talk about. If I can do a little bit of a backstory, backstory of this one, Steve. You and I talked earlier, and I said, I'll get a new whiskey. What do you think? And you're like, I'm going to the gym. I was unable to communicate with you what was out there. But I did send a picture of this, which you did not get back to me in time before I bought it. But I could tell, of the things I sent pictures of, the Maker's Mark cask strength coming in at 111.5 proof.
Of course.
So it's, yeah, it's a big one. And anyway, I saw that. All the ones I sent to you, I said, there's only one bottle of that, and it's cask strength. So this got Steve written all over it, so that's why I chose that. So
Good.
And then I get in my car 20 minutes later, get a text from you, sorry I couldn't get back to you, I was in the middle of a workout. Did you get the Makers?
Yes. You don't have to tell people the whole...
I think that's a good story.
It's not. I don't like it.
All right, well,
too much info.
It's not too much info. You don't want people knowing that we actually relate to each other outside of the...
No. I just don't need to know.
I think it's a cool story. It took 30 seconds.
This is good. It's big. I'm a little bit disappointed only in the fact that the alcohol does overpower it a little bit. But it actually has some really good flavors in it. Some cherry, some vanilla, some cinnamon. Overall, I think for the average bourbon drinker... Or a new person or a person that doesn't drink a lot of bourbon, this might be too big and too aggressive for them.
Brutal, yeah.
But I do like it. It's funny. I got 92 myself.
And, I give it 92. You give it.
And I think the flavor is really good, but it is just. I mean, it's just really the alcohol is really strong on it.
Yeah, it definitely does overpower some of the flavors, but it is still really
and it's something
good.
Where I
it's
think
smooth if I, for as strong as it is. Though.
It is.
I mean, it's not burn. Not
and
a bad
I think
burn.
If this is one that you pick up the Maker's Mark cask strength, then probably the best way to do it is maybe cut it with a couple drops of distilled water, and that'll probably open it up pretty good. Or maybe just drop an ice cube in there, just one, and that will kind of help. You know, kind of disperse some of the alcohol and let some of those other flavors come through, which
is not something you usually recommend. So that should tell listeners something.
I mean, and that's good to do. I mean, as much as I enjoy Booker's and Blanton's, once you get over, 105 on the proof, then, it's probably a good idea to either add an ice cube or cut with water, just because you're going to be hard pressed to. Find one that with the alcohol content that high, where the alcohol doesn't kind of get you at some point.
Yeah, whether it's
whether it's right in the front or right in the back,
Right. So I know what I wanted to talk about today, but of course, there was a mass shooting in New Zealand today, and we can't ignore that.
No.
49 people dead in an attack that was clearly motivated by xenophobia.
It was a terrorist attack.
It was
it was a terrorist attack on two separate mosques in New Zealand. It was at one point it was being live streamed by one of the shooters.
How fucked up is that?
And it's a brutal crime. It's just there's no it's unexcusable. And I want before we even get into it, I'm going to say that the blame is 100%. On the attacker, on the terrorist, on the person that perpetrated the crime.
Sure.
And I
as
think,
opposed to
well, people there are people out there going immediately to the this is Trump's fault. This is because of the spread of white nationalism and things like that. They're blaming it, and those are factors.
I think those are valid points. Yeah,
those are factors, but the reality is. This is the person who decided to do this, it's on them, right? Because it's one thing to be a racist dick, right? You're a racist dick.
You say shit at the bar and
okay,
whatever.
Fine.
You're
right?
a dick.
But as soon as you decide to take action and take away people's lives, then that's a whole another thing. And you know, yeah, he put out this manifesto of 80 some odd pages, you know, and pointed directly to Trump and other people in conservative, you know, conservative commentators that he looked up to. And what's interesting, the guy was Australian, and a big part of his manifesto was the American, the American Constitution and the U.S., the Second Amendment, and a lot of things going on in America and issues that are not really relevant because he is from Australia, right? Right. So, you know, using those as kind of baseline motivating factors to put out this manifesto and then to go out and commit this crime.
Along with three others. It was a coordinated terrorist attack.
Right, it was. I mean, they had bombs, you know, attached to their cars, you know, ready to go off. You know, they went in with multiple weapons. It just, I mean, it was, I mean, it had to be truly terrifying for the people on the ground there who were experiencing
it. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I agree that, so he only made one reference to Trump, and actually, I not to laugh at this, but he basically said he supports Trump from a perspective of a white nationalist, but when it comes to his policies, oh God, no. So I agree with you. You can't blame Trump or blame any individual politician, but you can blame a culture or a culture for contributing to it. And yes, you're right. The individuals involved get, you know, they are 100% responsible for their actions. But yeah, we've gotten really hate-filled. And maybe we've been this way for a long time, and just now it's way easier to communicate it. But these things are happening so fucking often these days. And, I mean, this is obviously foreign country, and I don't know a lot about the gun laws in New Zealand. I basically just know what I read today. They're apparently not nearly as strict as Australia. But you know, they're not as loose as the United States.
And I don't think they had ever had anything like this happen before in New Zealand.
I think that New Zealand is kind of, you know, thought to be that peaceful kind of remote place. I know a lot of Americans are moving there, like rich Americans are moving there because it's got, you know, great wine country, and it's, I mean, the landscape is beautiful. I know this personally from watching Lord of the Rings movies.
Yep.
But I mean, just gorgeous. And it's kind of a weird place in the sense that it's a small island in relatively low population. I think there's 5 million people in the country of New Zealand. By the way, only 50,000 Muslims. So we're talking about a minority of 1% that was attacked in this situation. And you sent me an article about a senator from Australia who basically blamed Islam for this.
Yep.
Which, when I say basically, no, he did.
He did.
And, you know, he didn't mince words. He basically just said, yeah, this is all Islam's fault. And I think...
Well, I mean, we don't even have to...
You want to quote him directly?
Yeah. I mean, he... His exact words, and this is the Australian Senator Fraser Anning. He published a statement. Okay, he published a statement after the shooting today. He said, "The real cause of bloodshed on New Zealand streets today is the immigration program which allowed Muslim fanatics to migrate to New Zealand in the first place. The truth is that Islam is not like any other faith. It is a religious equivalent of fascism." And just because the followers of this savage belief were not the killers in this instance does not make them blameless. So he is literally blaming the victims of a terrorist attack for their attack.
Yeah.
For being attacked.
Yeah. And
basically saying because you exist and because you're here, and you're got attacked.
And you're different, and we've heard bad things about you.
He's literally saying, well, that's on you. You got shot and killed, that's on you. Because you're here.
I wonder what the repercussions will be for that guy in Australia.
It seems like, so what I read about him, this is par for the course for him.
Right.
And there will be no repercussions.
And truthfully, I mean, I've never been to Australia, never been to New Zealand. But Australia does have a sketchy history of racism different than what we have in America. They basically, well, in a way, it's similar how Americans treated Native Americans, right? The Aboriginal people pretty much got shoved out of their homes and have been mistreated. So I guess what I'm getting at is Australia and racism have had, there's a history of Australian racism based on that. And I think as an American, I very naively have kind of, and I know better, but my natural, like where my brain goes is racism is a real problem in America. It's not nearly as bad in Europe. It's not nearly as bad in Australia. Well, maybe it is. I mean,
I don't know why you would think it wouldn't be. I mean, like some. I mean, Australians have actually a pretty bad history with racism. And you know, the way they treat the Aborigines, the way they treat black people when they're there, you know, I mean, you can always find anecdotal stories of the black person who went to Europe and found it so amazing and liberating and whatever via, look at Tina Turner, like, I'm just moving to Paris cause it's so great. Or, you know, the black person that went to Australia and was universally embraced and had a wonderful time and they have all the great stories, but there are people of color who live in these places full time that actually have some pretty, that can document for you a pretty shitty history in Europe, in Australia. It's not unique to the United States. Maybe the racism in the United States itself is unique and it's different everywhere you go based on history. But, I mean, it's an issue everywhere, right? And if you think about what Australia is, right, like if you think of the demographic makeup of it, and, you know, there's... You're not going to have, you know, the United States has, you know, the black people that it has, a lot of that is because of, you know, the slave, you know, slave migration.
Right.
Right. And then over time you had, you know, people who were from, whether it's South America or the Caribbean islands or the West Indies that, you know, migrated here, and people who came from Africa after, you know, after the fact and blended in. So that helped to, you know, diversify the population over time, over the last couple, what, probably 150 to 200 years. But, you know, the base of the population is because of slavery.
Right.
And Australia didn't quite have the same... didn't have the same experience.
Criminals from England who got sent there and told to fend for themselves, basically.
Right.
And they chose to oppress the native people of that island.
And so it's different in terms of, you know, how the demographics, like what the demographics are and how they came to be. But, you know, in terms of having one group that is oppressive to another group, that's something that you find across the world.
Apparently. And, but this particular attack, you know, more details will come out. It literally happened today. But the guy's manifesto makes it real clear where he's coming from. And we've gotten some back and forth on Twitter about how, you know, the left is to blame for this. And sorry, not buying it.
No, I mean, I think that there's a better conversation to be had in terms of, you know, deflecting blame to the right or the left and saying, oh, it's Donald Trump's fault. Again, it's not Donald Trump's fault. People like this existed before Donald Trump.
Sure.
And the idea that, oh, well, they're mobilizing now and it's because they feel more comfortable doing it because of Donald Trump. No,
I don't agree with that.
That's not, that's not. And so I guess before I get to my point, then my rebound to you is like, you're going to sit there and say, well, Donald Trump has responsibility for this. No, he doesn't. He actually doesn't.
I didn't say that.
You said it in the past.
He has responsibility. Okay, he has responsibility for emboldening white nationalism. Yes, I will stand by that.
Okay. Well,
that just doesn't.
I disagree.
All right.
It's people are using, like, listen, for whatever reason, Donald Trump won't come out and take a truly firm stance against white nationalism and things like that, right? Like, he'll pussyfoot around it. He'll say, oh, well, this is bad or whatever, and then he'll come out with the both sides bullshit, right, and all that other stuff. I really think and he won't do it because of just the way his brain is set. You know, and I've said for a long time, is Donald Trump a racist? Yes, no, maybe. And I think he's more of an elitist than anything, and which can look an awful lot like racism because generally, you know, people of color are poor, you know, you have larger groups of poor people of color than you do white. And in the circles that he runs in, it's predominantly white, right? Right. But Donald Trump is the type of person where if he has money or if you have money, he will talk to you, right? But I think that you also have to understand that racism is not just isolated to people with hoods and people with swastikas, right? And that's where conservatives and a lot of people on the right and white people want to say, I'm not in the Klan, I don't have swastikas, and I don't say nigger all the time to black people's faces. You know, I mean, like with, you know, with a kind of an asterisk caveat there.
Right.
Right. Like, I do say it, but usually not around them. So, I think that, you know, whether Donald Trump is a racist, it's a stupid question. It's irrelevant, and it's a stupid debate to have, right? The reality is, where this is coming from, it's the reason why it's starting to show its face more is because of people's ability to communicate freely across the globe, right? So you may not be able to find someone in your school or in your neighborhood or, you know, anywhere locally that agrees with you, that thinks the way you do, but you have the whole fucking world at your fingertips on the internet. Eventually, you're going to find a pocket of people who think the way that you think. And that's where the energy for this is coming from, right? They throw Trump out there because they know that it gets people worked up. It gets people flamed up, right? But I mean, in reality, they have these sick thoughts, and they had them before Donald Trump. Like, they didn't just flip a switch and say, oh, you know what? Donald Trump's president, so now I'm a racist.
This guy, I mean, he specifically cited that guy from Sweden whose name I can never come up with. Killed, I think, like, it's 77 people.
Anders Bjerk or something like that. It's
a good guess if he's Swedish. And Dylan Roof, he specifically mentioned that. And that was another. Dylan Roof and this guy are saying, you know, Dylan Roof blamed, you know, black men are raping white women, and we're
Dylan Roof wanted to start a race war.
Yeah.
The guy from Sweden or Norway or whatever, the Nordic country, he wanted to start a race war. And, you know, there was a guy who in New York City who killed a black homeless man for the reason of he wanted to start a race war. This isn't Donald Trump. This is the underworld, right? Oh, this is the bad part of the internet. Right, sure. The part of the internet that sucks. Like, there's so much good that comes from having information at your fingertips and being able to communicate with the world, but this is the bad part of it. This is the bad side.
But here's where I think we're probably going to disagree. I blame the Rush Limbaughs and the Alex Joneses of the world for stirring the pot. That might not be the right expression, but that kind of hate rhetoric, which is usually veiled. It's usually, you know, they'll say racist shit or you know, stuff designed to scare a 40-something white guy into thinking the world is against me, the world's not fair to me, and they've been spewing this shit for 30...
Listen, and you're not wrong, but at the same time, you have people on the left who do the same shit. You have people on the left who you can go, there's a channel, Sirius227, and they're just as fucking wacko as your Rush Limbaughs. Right, and they push a hard left agenda. They say things that, I mean, in terms of, you know, but they do it in a different way, right? And it's in how they talk about.
I don't think they try to make a group feel like victims that need to use violence to change their.
No, Rush Limbaugh doesn't make anybody. He doesn't say no. He doesn't. You've never heard Rush Limbaugh say you need to take, you know, pick up arms and go out into the streets.
I've heard Alex Jones do it.
Okay,
and then he says, "I mean this figuratively, of course, but."
Oh, okay.
He said, it's time to grab your rifle. He said that.
I'll give you Alex Jones. And where is he now? Back in the fucking corners
He's still, come on. He's still out there. He's been deplatformed on, he's been
deplatformed everywhere because of his ridiculous behavior. And most of it is because of Sandy Hook.
Right.
But, I mean, if you're going to say that Alex Jones is the reason why a guy like this does this, and come on.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's a contributor to the cultural problem that leads to this. I've got a bunch of guns, and based on everything I'm hearing, the world is working against me. White people are being... I mean, white people feeling like victims, to me, is... I was going to say hilarious. I'll just go with ridiculous.
Okay, I understand that, and I agree to it. To an extent, but I think the bigger problem are people who feel that way, who are feeding each other, right?
You're a victim, I'm a victim, you're a victim, this is four people,
right? And then all of a sudden, then it's just like, well, what do we do? What are we going to do about it? You know, like, and then it's like, all right, let's just, you know, let's put a plan into action, right? Like, you know, Dylan Roof did it in such and such place. And, you know, if you look at the stuff that Dylan Roof was listening to, it wasn't Rush Limbaugh. It wasn't Alex Jones. I mean, he was in some, you know, I mean, he was...
No, he was probably listening to someone who listened to them, though.
Okay. He's listening to adults. Jim, come on, right? Like, I mean, at some point, like, he was listening to some guy who was listening to them. Right? I mean, get the fuck out of here with that.
What do you mean?
He's listening to a guy, Like, what is that?
Okay, that's garbage. All right, what was he listening to?
He was in, it was chat rooms and, you know, private Facebook groups that all talked about white supremacy. You know, the Civil War was the war of aggression, and you know, showing statistics of, you know, like black crime and black men against white women. Okay. You know, all those sorts of things. That those sort of things, you know, just in abundance, at like in the form of a fire hose in this kid's face, and then also like, all right, let's drag him out into the woods and show him how to shoot guns, and you know, spend time with him shooting guns and all that other shit. That's how you get a Dylann Roof,
right? And I think that the right wing nutcase media fuels that fire.
Okay.
And I don't know how you,
because I can get rid of Rush Limbaugh. I can get rid of Alex Jones, and I guarantee there's a lot of people who've never even fucking heard of those guys, who operate just fine with their racist views, right? I mean, a guy like Richard Spencer doesn't give a fuck about Rush Limbaugh. He doesn't give a fuck about Alex Jones. Richard Spencer created a movement all on his own without the help of any of those guys, right, in a really short amount of time. So the idea that, oh, well, it's conservative right-wing talk, does it help? No, right? I mean, if you have to give it some sort of credence, then fine, I'll give it 10%. But the rest of this is me and you sitting in a room bitching and moaning about how the world is out to get us. What are we going to do about it? And then we take that rifle off the wall and we go to the gun shelf, or we go to the gun safe, and we say, we're going to fix this right now.
All right, well, that you know, gun I mean, and not the right choice, but...
Okay, agreed, but, you know...
It's a 303 bolt action British Enfield, so it's not a good choice. But anyway, so Marco Rubio, I got one of my gun guy Facebook connections posted a oppose this law, and it's the red flag bill being proposed by Marco Rubio, which basically said, the bill is basically, if you see someone who's acting in a way that causes alarm, you should notify authorities, and authorities should have the right to temporarily seize people's guns, and the gun crowd is up in arms. Now, I find it really interesting that Marco Rubio is the champion of this bill, but then again, he is the senator from Florida, and you know, the Parkland shooting still resonates pretty strongly. Obviously, I didn't look at the details of the bill. I don't know what it takes for the government to take actions where they can take your guns away, but this is the sort of thing that feeds the NRA. And
this should be the type of thing that feeds any person that owns guns. I don't like the idea of the government coming in and taking a gun because someone else says, well, I don't like him.
Steve threw a bottle cap at me. Take his guns.
Right. Jim
starts with a bottle cap, ends with a gun.
Jim drinks too much by himself, and I think he's depressed, and I think that he's dangerous. All right.
Are you speaking your actual mind now?
No, I'm just saying. How does this work?
No, it's dangerous. There's two sides to it. I agree. I mean, that sort of thing is the kind of law that the NRA says, here's how they, you know, the law can say one thing, but once it's legal and it's a matter of interpretation, you can interpret it all kinds of ways. And it can be, you know, like I said, Jim's depressed or Steve threw a bottle cap at me. That was an aggressive act. Take away his guns. It's a dangerous thing. Now, the flip side of it is also pretty easy to understand and argue, and that is Parkland being a perfect example. That guy was called like 29 times or 19 times. I forget. I know it ended in 9. But a ridiculous number of times the police or the FBI were notified about that guy. Nothing happened, and we know the result.
Okay, so stop right there.
All
right. That's where the problem is, right? That's where your problem is, right? If you're the police and you're the FBI is notified of this guy, what he was putting online, what was on YouTube, you know, the police are called, he's got these issues. That's your issue right there, right? You don't need an additional law on top of it, right? At that point in time...
for them to take actions, as far as I know, he had not been charged with anything.
So, the FBI didn't investigate shit. And the FBI, like, looked at it. The FBI went online, went on YouTube, said, oh, well, we're not sure if this is this guy or whatever. So that was it. Right? Like, the FBI didn't follow through, you know, do an actual investigation and do anything about it. Right?
Nor did the local police. But what could they have done if there were no actual crimes committed? If this guy just said a bunch of hateful stuff? That's what this Rubio bill says they should have the ability to do, which I agree is dangerous. Well, the issue is
what
dangerous...
he was saying, right? I mean, if he's saying that he wants to go down as the all-time greatest school mass shooter murderer, right, of all time, then there's a step that can be taken, right? There's ways to interpret laws. Like, and listen, you could say, no, there's not. Listen, police interpret shit wrong all the time.
Yeah.
You have plenty of police that have kicked in the door, taken action, and said, we will ask questions fucking later, right?
Which we would agree is wrong.
Okay.
Right?
Right, okay, that, so now
I didn't say I was right. I said that's what this is going to try to. That's what this is trying to do, right? That's what this bill is about. Which we can argue for. You know, honestly, Steve, I don't know how I feel about it. I don't. The idea that you know, Steve could have his anti-gym manifesto, and I could say, you know, Steve just published his manifesto that said I'm going to eliminate gyms from the world because there's one asshole that I drink whiskey with and talk to all the time. And the police would come to your house and go, did you write this? Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for letting us know.
And I don't know
what the solution is. I truly don't.
I don't know what the details are of the law. So that's
I don't either.
That's a problem, right? Like, and, it, you know, just kind of sprung it on me. So I just think on the surface, I don't like it, right? If it has very specific
criteria for...
Yeah, criteria for removal... Right, where, you know, certain acts are defined as, you know, aggressive or what have you.
Sure.
And if these things occur, and they definitely occur, then these are the situations where we can remove a weapon from the home if there is one.
Well, the other factor...
And even still, I still don't like the idea of going in and just removing guns from people's houses just because of these various factors.
And then there's a bunch of other reasons. I mean, so you're talking mostly from a legal perspective or from a... civilian perspective, but there's also
constitutional.
Okay, but there's also a logical perspective, and that is, if you come into someone's house and take their guns away, nothing says they can't get more. I mean, we've seen background checks fail time and again. There's you know, gun shows. There's so many ways that someone, and that's the sort of thing that would likely push someone to the brink of violence, right? If they're someone who clings to their guns the way that we're describing, and then the government comes in and takes them away, probably does not create a situation that is likely to end well.
But I mean, if they come in and take your guns away, right? Then that means there's got to be some sort of database that information goes into, which should be a part of the background check database.
Right.
So if you know, according to the NRA, you know, there's very few, you know, loopholes into buying guns. And, you know, if you go to a gun show, you have to get a background check. And if you go to Dick's, you get a background check. And
gun shows are a bit iffy.
Right. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I mean, if everyone's following the rules, right, then this should, even though they may want to go out and buy a gun, like, they're going to have to go to some extreme measures, you know, like just going out on the street. You know, and buying it from, you know, Joe Blow.
Right.
You know,
but, which like is a not
person,
hard to do.
Right. Like a person to person sale as opposed to, you know, like you're saying, a gun show dealer, or a licensed dealer of some sort.
All right. We can beat this into the ground, but we're not going to go anywhere, I don't think. I just wanted to put it out there that bill is going to go to the Senate, and it's been put out there by a Republican senator, and I'll be curious to see how it plays out. And we can talk about it more as we get down the road. But all these things really feed the NRA narrative, and one other thing that really feeds the NRA narrative is what happened with Idris Elba. What's happening in London, and that Idris Elba brought to the...
He just commented on it, right? On his Instagram.
Okay, but he made a pretty impassioned video about it.
All right, so I'm going to play it for you here.
All right.
Yeah, I grew up in the 80s, and it was knife crime back then between blacks and whites, and now it's definitely between young black men in small, tiny communities, and it's affecting everyone. We all look stupid. You look even more stupid. If you've got a knife or you know someone that's got a knife, tell them to stab themselves right now. Trust me, because you're just going to stab your future if you go and stab someone else. You become a murderer, you go to prison, you ain't got shit. For what? For some beef that lives within your community. You need to see past that. We have to say something about it as well. Entertainers that are out there, there's young people that look up to us, man. We need to just vocalize this, send a message out saying, put the knives down, it's dumb. All right, it's dumb. We don't need to be killing ourselves. We have so much more we can offer. And you're going to kill your future, you're going to kill someone else's future, and it's dumb. Entertainers, do me a favor, man. Put out similar videos. Let's try and put out some and say that we care for our communities. Stop the knife crime, please. Yeah, knife crime
Okay, so that's right. Idris Elba, and that's his, you know, sort of plea for, you know, young black men in London to put the knives down, like you said. Knife offenses in London are a serious rampant issue.
I mean, there's like 15,000 of them or something.
Right, I mean, it's crazy. And I guess what kind of, why I was drawn to it is, one, I follow Idris Elba because he's a man of high fashion and okay. ladies like him, and I like to keep pace. Not that I don't have his looks, but if I could just follow his lead a little bit, I figure that's probably better for all involved. That being said, he, you know, when I'm listening to this, it sounds like what we hear here in the States when it comes to guns.
Yep, right? Absolutely.
It sounds like, you know, the violence between young black men. What about Chicago? You know, I mean, right. that's the go-to is the violence in Chicago and inner city black on black crime. And we go to this all the time. Right. And you hear this from black entertainers, like, just listen, put the guns down, stop the violence, the whole thing.
Right.
And I think, you know, now your Second Amendment advocates and your NRA people, they're going to jump all over this and say, like, look, if you take the guns away, the guns are just replaced with something else, right? They're just replaced with knives.
Knives, right.
Right, and you're still going to have violence, and you're still going to have deaths and everything else. Well, and the counter-argument to that is, yeah, they have knife violence, and it sucks being stabbed, but I'd rather be stabbed because it's easier to survive a stab wound than a gunshot wound.
Sure.
Right? Like, I can defend, I have a better chance defending myself against a person with a knife. You know, I mean, if you're a well-trained knifesman or whatever the, you know, like, I mean, if you know what I mean? Like, if all you do is train with knives, right? And you're some sort of character like Steven Seagal in whatever that movie,
Hard to Kill.
Hard to Kill, then okay, that's one thing. But if you're just pissed off teenage dude, then I feel I have a better chance against you with him with a knife than I do with him with a gun. And
right.
So, you know, that's kind of the counter of it. But the whole point is you got to get to root cause. Right. I mean, ultimately, you need to get to the root cause of anger and violence. And we know what it is. Right.
Right.
It's income disparity. It's, you know, fighting for
oppression. Right. Environmental poisoning.
Right. All those things. Right. And so we have to start to address those things here and apparently in London. Right. Like that's how you want to solve this issue. Then it's not going to be, and I don't even want to talk about it. I know we talked about it, like the stupid congressman or the person
in
England who wanted to register knives and put GPS in knives. It's so dumb.
It's so dumb, but when people say that shit, it fuels the crazy on the other side, right?
You're right, it does, but you can't get distracted by that because too many people are distracted by the dumb and the crazy and the, you know, the fight for their weapons and everything else. Like, and fighting for keeping your gun or losing that again, it doesn't address it, right? Like, even if the left were to win and get their way, and all right, we've gotten rid of AR-15s and we've gotten rid of handguns and we have very few limited, you know, there's no guns and we're just like Australia. Okay, great. But people are still poor. And people are still desperate, and people are still in shitty environments with shitty water and no food and no healthy food within miles, and they're still acting out. And so maybe they don't have guns, but they will still find ways to act out.
Inflict damage, yeah. I mean,
right. I mean,
register baseball bats.
Right. I mean, whatever it is, you're still going to have problems, right? And it's just like, well, it's not as bad because it's knives or bats or crowbars or whatever. But it's still going to cause pain and suffering, and it still doesn't solve the actual fundamental problem that is causing the violence, right? And so I'm not saying that because of that we should abandon the entire argument on gun violence and guns.
I'm still into registration. I'm still into background checks. And the funny thing is, most people are on board with background checks and registration, even a substantial amount of the gun crowd. It's I put a lot of blame on, for this particular issue, I put a lot of blame on the NRA because they are amazingly powerful and amazingly good at fear-mongering and making people think really dumb thoughts. And when guys say, we're going to make you register your knives, that only feeds their narrative. I'll stop there.
Yeah, I mean, your beef is with the NRA specifically, and for obvious, clear reasons. I pay pretty close attention to the gun world. And so there's other groups out there besides the NRA that are, I mean, they're pushing an entire gun culture. And
what do you mean by?
Like, it's not just, it's not, like, literally, like, fitness as a lifestyle. They push owning weapons as a lifestyle, right? Sure. Like, I work out 4 or 5 times a week. These people are at the range 4 or 5 times a week, and they encourage other people to be at the range. And they preach safety and, you know, knowing the weapons and, you know, using good weapons and the whole nine, right? And, you know, they do speak out against people. You know, they speak out against, you know, gang violence and things like that. And there's obviously the racial undertones that go with that. But, you know, even Kevin Dixie, who we had on our show, I know he works with the NRA, but he is willing to work with just about any gun advocacy group and push their narrative forward about gun ownership and gun safety and things like that. And he uses it as a way to kind of reach out to, you know, inner city youth and things like that. And I think there's some good in what he does. But there's a bigger net out there than just the NRA, right? Like, yes, they're a big group and they raise a shit ton of money. They're also losing a lot of money as of late.
They're the flagship for this, though, right?
Okay, they are. But I'm pissed at the NRA, but how close attention do you actually pay to the day-to-day that the NRA does, right? Like, to actually pay attention to their
spokespeople? I used to get their fucking magazine and read it.
Okay, but you used to, and when's the last time you actually sat down?
I guarantee you it hasn't changed.
It's not their magazine. It's what are their people saying? What are they actually putting out into the ether, and who is doing it, and how are they doing it? Because how they do it has changed. Right, like they've done that by design, because the old way of, you know, pumping Wayne LaPierre's face and the people like that out there, that's changed, right? So now they have more women, and they have attractive women, and they've got a black guy, they've got 2 black guys, they've got 3 black guys, and their narrative isn't just get a gun. Right now, it's how has the NRA impacted relationships amongst African-Americans, and we stood with African-Americans during the Civil Rights Movement, and nobody else did, and blah, 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 blah. Okay. Right? Like, their narrative has changed.
All right. But one part of the narrative that has not changed, and that's what I'm always calling out, is the fear-mongering, the government's coming to take your guns, look at this bill in California that's trying to outlaw ammunition or make you register ammunition. They've consistently done that.
Well, but they point out things that are actually there. You have these congressmen and state congressmen who put this shit out there. Right, and so it's not like it doesn't exist.
That's why I'm calling this idiot from England out. Like,
okay, that's fine. And fuck it, England and their knives, right? Like, seriously, you know, Marco Rubio's putting this bill out there. That's legit, and I mean, it's debatable on its effectiveness. And we should read it before we write. Which wrote that down, but we'll talk about it after the show, and then. You know, I think there's a lot out there, and I think that if you're going to call out the NRA, right, and I don't have a problem with you calling out the NRA, but if you're going to call them out, then you need to know who they are, right? Like, I mean, like, we see Trump in real time every day. He tweets, we read the tweets, he puts the shit out there, he says it, like, you see it, you know it. So, like, it's easy to sit there and pick it apart and say, this is my issue with it. But just casting a net over the NRA and saying, I know who they are, and I don't like them because of this. Like, I have an issue with that. Like, if you're going to do it, then you need to follow the NRA, and you need to, just because you did it 20 years ago, old man, I don't really give a fuck.
Actually, three, but
okay,
four.
But okay, fine. But, I mean, it doesn't take long for them to change their narrative, and because of social media, things have changed.
You're acting like I've been in a bubble, and I think that's unfair.
Okay, well, unfair or not, it's true, because, how much attention have you actually paid to the NRA lately?
Plenty! I read their shit online all the time.
Okay.
I've written shit about them online and respond to their articles. All right, we're going nowhere here.
You're going nowhere.
Yeah, okay.
I'll put a Twitter poll out after the show. We'll see who agrees with who.
You definitely do that, please. The show will get published on St. Patrick's Day, so that could really impact the the way that's responded, but even, all the more reason to do it. All right, so just real quick on Trump. He the House released, put out a bill to block him using a declaration of emergency. It passed in the Senate with surprising Republican support. 12 Republican senators voted with Democrats who were 100% for that bill. So now it becomes the first thing that Trump has vetoed as president. The Congress will not be able to override that veto. But I think this is a really interesting thing from a constitutional standpoint, because the folks who, especially the Republicans who stood against this, Rand Paul was one, and there were several others. I think they're all doing it on a constitutional future concern level.
Yeah,
and I think
they're right. It's why they're doing it, and they're right. They're like, listen, we can figure out something for the wall, but don't call this a national emergency, right? And then, circumvent the process. And, take away the power of the purse from Congress just so that you can get something that you want. Because if you do that, then you will open the door for the next guy to come in and do it for something that we don't agree with, we don't want. And if they have the numbers, how the fuck are we going to stop it?
And I think Democrats learned this lesson the hard way when they brought in what they called the nuclear option or whatever.
Yep.
When they said 51 votes in the Senate is all you need.
All you need.
You don't need 60 anymore. So we're doing that and patted themselves on the back when they did it, and it felt real good. And then it came back to bite them in the ass.
Right. I mean, and again, elections have consequences here.
Yep.
And I think that you have some relatively astute people in the Republican Party in the Senate that are saying, if we lose an election, which could very well happen in the near future, right, we just saw ourselves, kind of get knocked out of the box in Congress in 2018. So it could theoretically happen in 2020 and be a clean sweep. And then what?
Right.
Right. And then whoever, a Democrat wins, they've got the Senate, they've got the House, they've got, you know what I mean? Like then,
and they say climate change is a national emergency.
Right.
Which I'd agree with. And say, okay, and because climate change is a national emergency, we're outlawing 8-cylinder vehicles. And they could do that.
I would lose my shit.
And suddenly Steve becomes a third party.
So all of a sudden, I become a terrorist.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is not, what I just said was not crazy.
No, it's not. Right. They said the gun problem is a risk, right?
Right.
Gun violence is a national emergency, right? And they're going to have a better leg to stand on with gun violence than immigration.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you just look at the number of people that are killed with guns every year, however many, whatever the number is. And then just like, we can't lose this many people, and they'll, break it up into some terrible, disturbing stat, and then say, all right, we're changing the Constitution and no more guns, right? Because if you have control of Congress, you have control of the Senate, you have control of the White House, you get some sort of
the Supreme Court.
And you get some sort of a supermajority in the Senate, then, I mean, you can go in to make constitutional amendments, right? So
it's a dangerous game.
It is a very, very dangerous game that they're playing, and this is the problem with Trump from a political standpoint, right? An actual playing the game of politics versus I'm going to run it like a business. And this is how I do business, and I do things my way. Like, there's you run a business, you're the boss, you're in charge, and as long as you're making money, you're good, right? But that's not how politics works, right? I mean, it's cyclical.
Sure.
And you can lose elections, and you eventually are not in power, right? You specifically, and someone else comes in power. And so you have to be conscious of that, right? It can't just be what you want now for your agenda, for your narrative, because if you're just thinking that short term, you hurt the guy after you, you hurt the other people that are underneath you and the people around you because of your short-sightedness. And this is where Trump has gotten himself in trouble in the past, and he could be getting himself in trouble now if he goes through with it, which it feels like he's going to do based off of the things that
he's done. He's vetoed. Or he said he will veto.
Yeah, he said he can't wait. He's looking forward to vetoing it.
Right.
So, it hasn't made it to his desk yet, and I'm sure he's got a big ceremony planned for it. Veto! Like, everybody, look.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. And people go off on me in particular, but both of us to a degree, when I just criticize Trump for being a douchebag, because it doesn't matter if the president's a douchebag, how is he doing as president? But a real case in point in that, in my mind, is what happened last week and the follow-up with the Tim Cook issue. So Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, is at an event and he's praising Tim Cook for all the great things he's doing for the economy. And then he calls him Tim Apple, which, slip of the tongue, who gives a shit? What I give a shit about is when he got criticism for that, rather than he flip-flopped on what happened. First he said, I said Tim Cook from Apple, but I just said Cook from Apple quietly and the cameras didn't pick it up. And then he said, I'm trying to be efficient with my words. I don't want to waste time. So I called him Tim Apple because everyone knows it's Tim Cook from Apple and I'm being efficient with my words. And that is so absurd. And when someone has an ego that will not allow them to ever just say, I spoke too fast or I slipped up or whatever, when they can't just say, yeah, I said something wrong because they can't handle being criticized, that person is dangerous, especially when they are in that position. And yeah, I know. It's not a policy thing. It's an ego thing. But that's a Kim Jong-un kind of ego thing.
It's just bizarre. I mean, it is bizarre. It's childish and, I guess, narcissistic. Like, you know, you made a mistake. Just eat it, own it, ignore it.
Ignore it was a smart move.
Right. Okay. I mean, you've got any number of ways. Right. I mean, you've got any number of ways to kind of work around that or ignore it. And yet he went he makes this whole thing up that he put it together to shorten time.
Look, that's
to
awesome,
save time. Like,
that makes just, Bill Clinton's "It depends what your definition of is" seem like child's play.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. And those are the sort of things where I just look at him and kind of roll my eyes. I don't think it doesn't say anything about his ability to lead. I mean,
I disagree.
Okay. You know, I mean, because I think as a president, there's so many moving parts. It's not just him.
True.
Right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of people behind him, so...
I don't think it disqualifies him from the job. I'm just saying it's a character reveal that is really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think that we're at a point now...
I'm not saying let's impeach based on the Tim Apple comment.
No, I think that we got to get to a point with this president, knowing, like, he's got some fundamental personal characteristics that we don't like, that most people don't like. I think even people who voted for him and people that support him will say that they don't like. And so I think that we have to just kind of draw the line and say, he is who he is, right? None of that shit is a surprise. Like, I mean, it did actually kind of surprise me that he went back and said, well, he was just trying to save time by cutting out the word like that.
The
like,
words, geez, oh, man. Cook from Apple saved us.
Yeah, whatever. But I guess with him, I think it makes more sense to focus on his actual policy, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and everything in between.
I completely agree. I know I kind of went petty here, but I do think it's a big character reveal. Not that it's the first time this character has been revealed, but this one is like crystal. I mean, it is clear as can be. So I just wanted to get that in there before we moved on to something else. Want to do some sports talk?
Sure.
So before we get into sports that are mainstream, well, not that mixed martial arts isn't mainstream, but fucking Conor McGregor is going to end up in jail before...
Well, we just reviewed his Proper 12 whiskey not too long ago, and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it could be stronger, and maybe they have an offering that is stronger, which... You know, we
quit
find.
Jockeying for position to get a free bottle of Proper 12 Plus. I see through you.
This benefits you as well, so why would you stop me?
Fair.
But, yeah, the timing on that wasn't good from our perspective, but I don't think he's so much worried about, you know...
Our whiskey review versus to prison.
Yeah, and I don't know if he'll go to prison. I mean, he'll get a slap on the wrist for this, pun intended.
I mean,
because
he grabbed someone's cell phone.
And he pulled someone's cell phone out, and then he threw it on the ground, and he stepped on it. To a degree, I can see where it would be frustrating. I couldn't imagine having people constantly taking pictures of me, and, you know, if I'm not in the mood, or if I've done, you know, I say, all right, every time a mob of people shows up, I'll do five, and then I gotta go, and I have a hard line. And people can be edgy, right? People can be pushy
and shitty,
and I don't know what happened here. You know, the person is obviously saying, I was surprised when he took my phone, and I can't believe that this happened, and blah, blah, blah. And who knows what really happened, what their actual interaction was. But I could see where you get frustrated. That being said, you know, you just, you have to control yourself. You have to, you know, prevent yourself from getting to the point where, you know, you do something irrational, right? And I think it's a tough line for people who they make their money by being filled with rage, right? And they make their money by fighting and being aggressive and things like that. So, and especially him.
Like, and by being, what's the word, flamboyant's not the right word.
Yeah, but no, it is. I mean, that's him. The way he walked into the ring and the way he talks and, you know, just everything. Like, he's got a certain flash and style and pizzazz. And so you're telling a fighter, like, you got to control it. And at all times, and I could see where it would be tough. That being said, you have to do it. You have to do it. Otherwise, it's not just, it's one thing if I get pissed. Now, like, even me getting pissed, it's not because I'm famous, but just my size and everything else. Like, if I hit someone or slap someone, it could have really, really bad, it could be a bad thing.
Yeah. Right? We've talked about this before. So, you know, you have to play by a different set of rules because you're a
very large
black man, yes.
You just have to play by a different set of rules, and he's got to play by those. Like, listen, you are a fighter. You are a trained professional fighter, right?
And whether extremely recognizable.
Right, like, you're very recognizable. People know your face. They know your voice, and they know your name, and so you cannot let your emotions get the better of you. Otherwise, it's going to cost you.
Right.
People want it to cost you. Right, like people want to see you.
And once you have established, there are idiots out there who just want a reaction.
Right,
their
whole purpose in life is to be like they're real life trolls.
Real life trolls, exactly.
That's exactly what I mean. They do
who have
it all,
more guts than online trolls.
And maybe they're the same type of person. Who knows?
Right,
or maybe
they're
the same people. But
guarantee they are.
And these trolls were actually around before the online trolls. Like, you've had these people forever.
Yep.
Right. I mean, the people. You could relate it to Russell Westbrook and what happened to him in Utah, where the fan, you know, yells just some obscene shit to him, and Russell Westbrook loses his shit and is just like, "Come on, you want to do it? We can do it." You know, you go back to the Palace at the Pines and Ron Artest and everything like that. You know, that guy throwing a beer, you know, at Ron Artest from the fans, and then he goes back up into the stands, and that caused the whole thing, and it was terrible. But you know,
those
people
fans antagonized them because they knew they had a chance at a reaction.
Right, and people and fans, whatever you want to call them, I don't even know if you can actually call them fans, but there are people out there who that's just all that they are, and that's what they do.
And that's really hard for me to like get my mind around. Like, just that is not my personality. I am not a trash talking, you know, like, you know, winning the trash talking battles to me means nothing. You win the game, you win the fight, you win whatever, that matters. But I talked better than you. Well, good for you.
Right.
To quote the great Christian Bale. So, yeah, the thing with Russell Westbrook was interesting. So the owner of the Jazz came out and actually made a statement. The owner of the Jazz is the widow of the former owner of the Jazz. And throw some love to my friend from the comedy scene, Mary Santora. She described the woman who owns the Jazz as looking like what Utah would be if Utah was a person.
I mean, yes.
Timed that pretty well.
Yes.
So that's Mary's joke, and it's very funny. But she does. I mean, she looks like an old librarian-type lady. And she was clearly uncomfortable, or sounded very uncomfortable, with that speech. But it kind of impressed me a little bit that she came out and said, like, I'm the owner of this team, and this is not acceptable. And when you consider this happened in Utah, which I meant to look up the demographics of Utah before we got online.
I think we know what they are.
That we know what they're not. They're not close to even. So, anyway, him losing, you know, losing his cool, not good. Not a good look. And when he told the guy he was going to fuck him up and his wife, too, or whatever.
Yeah.
That was a particularly bad look. But, you know, this is back to Conor McGregor. It's like, this sucks. It's annoying. But
well,
you can't
I think,
do certain things.
I guess where you have to kind of draw the line with Westbrook is, like, you got to leave his wife out of it. Now, if he would have said, I'll fuck you up and my wife will fuck up your wife, then, okay, fine. Right. In the heat of the moment, if you can come up with that, then kudos
to
you.
Yeah, good for you.
But, you know, you want to leave the wife out of it. It's just a bad look with the NBA and sports in general. And most of that is thanks to the NFL. But, you know, expressing your frustration is like verbally, I think, is still different than, you know, physically touching someone, taking their phone, breaking it.
Agreed.
You know, I mean, it just, I think that, you know, if a fan is out there just saying just obnoxious, ridiculous shit, then a player should have the ability to just say, like, hey, shut up.
Or you know what they really should have is a security crew that's like, hey, that guy. He has two choices. He needs to come say that shit to my face, or he's got to go.
I
know you would support that.
I would support the first one.
Steve. Please. I know you would. But that's part of. I mean, we're not talking about online trolling here. We're talking about live trolling. But still, you're talking about trolling from the safety of 18 rows of seats or 10 rows of seats. Well, and I'm a fan. And
right. I'm you're a fan. $20 million
a year professional athlete. You're not coming up here.
And I've never understood the mentality of, you make a lot of money, so I'm going to say whatever I want to say to you because you make a lot of money. I never understood that mentality at all.
I don't understand. Well, I understand why people do it, because they think if you come up here and punch me, I'm going to sue you and I'm going to get $1 million.
I mean, the reality is that never happens, right? It happens so infrequently.
That mentality happens all the time. But, and that is the mentality, I think.
But, I mean, players... You get maybe, look, you know, I don't know. I don't understand the mentality of guy going to game and just saying the most obscene, obnoxious shit.
Now, what did he say? I heard in this case, he said something about get on your knees where you belong or something to that effect. And it was, the question was, okay, are you saying, you know, suck my dick, or are you saying be a slave? Neither of which are okay.
Either way, in my face, like, you are the one going to your knees. You know, like, you say that shit to my face, you're the one who's going down, period. So...
In which...
either way, right? Like, I mean, you get me in a bad enough mood, I'll make you wish you hadn't said it.
No, I...
not you, I'm just saying.
I know, and I didn't take that as a personal thing, but I'm... Either, so whether it was a homophobic thing or a racial thing, who knows? Either way, it was inappropriate. And I agree with you that, you know, as a professional athlete, you're there to participate in your sport. And I don't mind... Like, if it's funny, if it's good-natured, talk shit. I mean, I told... You know the name Gary Trent played ball for OU? All right. He was in the NBA for like 10 years. Anyway, I, from the sideline of a basketball arena, told him while he was trying to shoot a free throw that I was going to flick a booger at him. Not the classiest thing I've ever done, but I was trying to make him miss a free throw, which he did not. But that's... It's dumb. I was in college. I'm not... Look, quit looking at me like that.
This is so, like...
But, you know what I'm saying? There's a difference between something stupid like I just said. Well, it's good that you don't do
it, because you're bad at it. I'm going to flick a booger at you.
Like, I'm flicking boogers at you, I believe is what I said. But anyway...
Did you have, like, a finger motion?
I think I did.
Oh,
I did.
God.
It was an important free throw. All right, I want to bail on this as fast as I can and talk real quick local sports and local other issues. Odell Beckham Jr. traded to the Browns for a lot. They gave up a lot to get him. First, a third, and for a really good safety.
For a 26-year-old...
For a stud. Odell Beckham Jr. is a fucking stud.
He's 26 years old on a Hall of Fame pace. He's, you know, had some injury issues, but all in all, I mean, he's arguably a transcendent player.
Yeah.
So, they gave up a first and a third, which... What are the chances your first and the third are going to be that productive of a player? And they gave up a decent safety. You know what I mean? They gave up a decent safety in Jabril Peppers, who really didn't show us anything until the second half of last year, when they finally started to play him in the role that he's meant to be played in. And so the jury is actually still out on him, so I'm okay with that. You can actually go back. You know, you still have a second round pick. You can go and you can find... You know, his replacement, and it's not like Jabril Peppers has been in the league that long. This is like this, he was going into his third year. So, you know, you go and you start over with the safety in the second round, or the way free agency is going, there's plenty of actually good safeties at his level or better that are still available.
That's a legitimate point.
So, I don't think that they gave up that much.
A first and a third shocked me.
But he's 26 years old, he is on a Hall of Fame pace. You have a young, vibrant quarterback who can get the ball down the field, can make all the throws. You've got Jarvis Landry, who was Beckham's teammate in college, and he's pretty damn good himself. You've got other receivers there, and Rashard Higgins, and David Njoku, who's developing. Like, if he could be more consistent, he could be really dangerous catching the ball. You've got Nick Chubb, who can run the ball. You've got Kareem Hunt, who was suspended for 8 games today.
Right.
But you'll get him back in the second half of the season.
Can I say something weird about that? That him being suspended for 8 games from the perspective of the Browns might actually help them. They're going to get a fresh guy 8 games into the season and not have to pay him for those 8 games. Not that that really affects their bottom line, but they're going to get a fresh guy who's a stud running back midway through the season in a team that is not lacking. It's not like, I mean, Nick Chubb is a very solid running back. That could actually, from the perspective of the Browns and their success, help them.
Yeah, I mean, he'll have to work himself back into shape, and you know, it's hard to be in football shape. Like, you just
right, without getting hit, and
right, like, you just have to, it doesn't matter how many sprints you run, like, you just have to get used to, you know, wearing the equipment and being hit and all that other stuff.
When he's suspended, is he suspended from all football activities? I think he is. Okay, so he cannot practice with the team.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Unless he got some sort of special dispensation from the league, which that's not coming. So, you know, it'll take him some time to get back in shape. So you probably won't actually see him until week 9 or 10,
right?
You know, 11 at the latest. But you're right. I mean, they will be getting a fresh running back, which could be potentially dangerous for the, you know, other teams in the division. Yeah. And
for you as a Steelers league, fan.
Who's yeah, I mean, it's been a rough go for the Steelers just in terms of what they've lost in terms of productivity. You didn't have Le'Veon Bell at all last year. He sat out, but then Antonio Brown at the end of this season completely loses his mind and decides that he wants out, and does everything to diminish his trade value, and gets himself traded for, you know, a third and a fifth round pick, which I never anticipated getting more than a third round pick for Antonio Brown strictly because of his age. He's 30 years old, and as productive as he's been, the reality is that he's played with a Hall of Fame level quarterback for his entire career. Those games where he didn't play with a Ben Roethlisberger, his productivity dropped substantially.
Sure.
So I think that any front office in the NFL is going to be able to look at the numbers when he's with Ben, when he's not. They're going to look at his age. They're going to look at his behavior, and that was going to impact his overall trade value, and it did. You know, going to the Raiders for a third and a fifth. You know, it's really unfortunate. And as a Steeler fan, I don't care if he ever catches a pass in the league again. I don't want to see him hurt because that's bad karma. But, I mean, if David Carr all of a sudden can't hit the broadside of a barn and, you know,
7 catches in a season and gets cut next year, and
he goes bouncing around the league, and, you know, he's got – if his career line looks similar to Mike Wallace, who left in free agency, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I just, you know, he hasn't been overly productive, and, you know, it's just like playing with a Hall of Fame level quarterback helps.
Helps a lot.
You know, ask Larry Fitzgerald how he feels about, you know.
Jeez.
Going from Warner to me and Josh you, Rosen, basically. Yeah.
One more thing about Odell Beckham. So, first of all, Odell Beckham kind of has a bad rap in the court of public opinion.
Amongst a certain group of people. And we won't get into the
demographics. Okay, let's not do that. But if you break it down, he's done nothing off the field other than the one video from Paris where there was a joint in his hand. Was it a joint in his hand?
I don't know.
It was weird.
I remember.
It was just really dumb on his part.
I don't know who made. I can't remember if he took the. I don't know. I think the girl he was with took the video. So I don't know.
Dangers of social media. Don't put you in Paris doing drugs. It won't help your cause. But even that, he was, as far as I know, he certainly didn't break any American laws. Might not have been broken any in France. I don't know what their stance is.
Like, being in a hotel room with a model and cocaine technically isn't a pizza crime, right? I mean, like, maybe it was hers.
It's probably my dream.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to comment on my experiences saying. I'm just saying he hasn't technically done anything wrong. I mean, it makes you raise an eyebrow.
And a lot of people have come out and said he's like, he's a nice guy. Off the field is a really good guy.
He's an emotional guy on the field.
Which I want.
Right. Right. I mean,
I had Kelvin Benjamin on my team. Kelvin Benjamin gave no fucks.
Right.
And he made it clear he gave no fucks.
Listen, I mean, and he was frustrated with Eli Manning. Who the fuck hasn't been? You know, I mean, I think Archie Manning gets frustrated with Eli Manning sometimes. So I don't like the bad rap thing with Odell Beckham. If you really break it down, it's like, what are we actually mad about? Right. I mean, my biggest beef with him is just I worry about him from a health standpoint. Right.
He's not the biggest guy.
It's not even that. I mean, he's got pretty decent size. It's just that, I mean, he's had a couple decent injuries that have taken him out for decent chunks. So that's my only concern. But other than that, like you're getting just a transcendent top flight receiver to the Browns with an offense that was relatively productive last year.
With a quarterback who set the record for rookie touchdown passes and did not play a full season.
Right. So
passed Russell Wilson and some guy named Peyton Manning to get that record. And
Peyton Manning went 1-15.
Yeah.
His rookie year.
He did.
So
yeah, he threw a ton of picks along with those touchdowns.
Right. I mean, so it just it'll be interesting. I mean, it's good for the city.
Was it 1-15 for Peyton? I know it was 1-15 for Troy Aikman. Was Peyton also 1-15?
I thought so.
I thought they were 1-15 when they drafted him, and they were like 4-12. Okay. Not trying to.
All right, maybe
they stunk.
Okay, yeah, he was really bad. Maybe, but I thought they were 1-15 as well. Either way, the
pickup is a good pickup, and yeah. So let's talk about this a little bit because so a kid in Shaker Heights, Ohio, just outside of Cleveland, learned that Odell Beckham had been traded to the Browns. Started wildly celebrating, running up and down the street, screaming, throwing his arms around. And if you saw that, I think we would agree that the right thing to do is to not call 911. But unfortunately, there's a woman out there who disagrees with us, and she called 911. There's a kid running around, and he's flailing his arms and yelling, and I don't know what's going on. Now, in everyone's defense, this actually kind of has a happy ending. She calls the cops show up, they meet the kid, and I didn't know this until you told me today, but the kid told them, we just got Odell Beckham Jr., and the cops started high-fiving the kid. So
yeah, because the police didn't know. Yeah, right. So I don't have a problem with her calling the police. Like, I mean, like, listen, dude's running around fucking crazy. I mean, I think...
I don't know how old he was, and that matters to me a lot.
I think he's like mid-teens.
Okay.
You know, I mean...
In the article I read, the age was not released, but he was a young black kid. I don't see this as a 911 call, but I'm not a woman in a car with my kids, so I'll cut her some slack.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, she's a woman in a car with her kids. She sees a guy running around. You don't know if he's going to circle back. So, you know, I mean, I think
if he's whacked out on something. Right.
There could be a deeper discussion because, like, if he's just having a mental health breakdown, then by calling 911, you actually have just put that kid's life in danger.
Well, right? The kid's life is somewhat in danger, right? We live in Cleveland. We know this is going to happen.
I mean, I think in Cleveland specifically, you know, I mean, they're
not... Shaker Heights, so it's a little different.
But the area, I mean, all these cops are trained. They're literally all trained by, you know, the same group of people, right? Whether you're a cop in the city...
What? I just need the cherry for my Manhattan.
It's, you know, they're all trained in the same, mm-hmm. like, they're trained by the same group of people. Unless they go to the Ohio State Patrol training thing.
Right.
Which is a little bit different. But I'm just saying that, you know, from a mental health aspect, the police in this area are not trained well and they don't deal with it well. Right? I mean, like, they've been sued multiple times.
That's well established.
For, you know, beating people with mental health issues that they've been called to work with or just flat out killing them or either shooting them or, you know, the one woman they hit with the stun gun and she ended up dying. But I mean, just like they don't have a good track record with it. So by calling the police with someone who's having a mental health breakdown, you definitely are putting their life in danger.
Yeah.
So, yep. You know,
but then again, we're talking about a woman in a car with her kids.
And it turned out fine.
It turned out
perfect. Everybody's happy. They high-fived. The police said, hey, that's nice. Cause they didn't know, you know, they let the kid go, no harm, no foul, no incident, no nothing. So it's a good story, positive ending. Which good way to end the show.
All right, let's end it there then. Good talking to you. A little tense today. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. We are. You can email me, Jim at Whiskey Congress, or him, Steve at Whiskey Congress, when you want to. Keep that coming. Thank you for the support. And Maker's Mark Cast Strength is some pretty good shit. Later.